Off the Ball, GAA.
Somebody's going to win and somebody unfortunately is not going to win. And we had a lot of days against Armagh. They're very, very special.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Koi Gig podcast. And it is our last episode of the WSL season. But never fear, because there will be more podcasts. We have, of course, those two all-important Irish international games coming up soon. And we have a Euros coming up as well in the summer that we are very sadly not attending. But we will still be bringing you coverage of it as well. Joining me to look back over the season that was and some interesting, slightly breaking unconfirmed news today is Scarlett Heron. Scarlett, how are you?
All good, Kathleen, all good.
I feel like I have to start at the weekend just simply because I gave Karen some grief for it last week, but it's been a good week for the Sligo Rovers contingent of the podcast again, and not so much for yourself.
Yeah, no, definitely. They know how to sort of block out a game. Obviously, they're that's two great performances back to back for them, and collecting 4 points from those two games is probably something that they would have set out to try to. They make it just very, very difficult for teams to break them down. And while we probably we dominated the game completely, we just couldn't seem to score. So we weren't good enough on the day, but I think credit has to go to Sligo for how they came about the game and how they performed on the day. They were really, really impressive, how they defended throughout. So I can't really give out too much, to be fair.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I was about to say Rovers, but I know that's controversial in the context of the two of us talking. But one of the things for Sligo Rovers over the last couple of years is getting those consistency in performances, you know, getting a big result and then following it up at one. So I think they'll definitely be happy with having that over the last 2 weeks. And I think if they'd look back and said that's how many points they were going to come away with, obviously you always want to come away with the full contingent, but they would definitely be happy with the performances that was put in. To stick with Irish football for a little bit, we had the breaking news today by John Fallon in The Examiner that Hannah Dingley is leaving her position as head of women and girls football. Now, this hasn't been confirmed by the FAI yet, just to put that caveat there. It's still sourced information, but John's generally fairly on the money with these things whenever he's reporting it. And Scarlett, it's hard. I think we kind of talked a little bit about her legacy whenever the report came out a couple of months ago and the lack of detail that was in there, the question marks over what had actually been achieved in the last year. And while it's surprising that she's going so soon, it's also kind of not surprising in a way.
Yeah, and I think even like after Mark Hannum's departure as well, like it's sort of backing each other up. But yeah, it's really disappointing to see that we don't have that sort of consistency in that role. That's probably an area where we need to have someone there for a number of years that can focus on a plan and then build it and see through the plan. Obviously, she set out goals, well, kind of set out goals in the recent development plan for Irish women's football, and she won't be able to see it out. So I think that's something we'd probably have to look for, is someone who's going to be long term and throughout any sort of online sort of stick they might get or any like controversy that might come in through the FAI, that they will be a consistent person to sort of drive standards in the league here and in our national teams as well. So I think that's probably something to look out for now. Will be the next person to come in. I think, as in that article, it's rumoured that Eileen would go back to her role. I personally think that would be a great decision, because obviously she knows the state of Irish women's football. She knows the players. She knows the league. She's been involved in it since the league began, and she's been involved in international football, obviously, in recent years. She knows what it takes to sort of develop the game. And I think it would be great to see her back in that role. And obviously we're unaware of sort of her current role at the minute. We know she's still employed to some capacity in the FAI, but I don't know if even she knows her current role herself. So I think it would be great to see back in, if that's possible.
It's been an interesting time. So like Mark Hannum and David Carell, well, Mark Hannum obviously before he decided that he was leaving his role, they had both refused to say anything about her position. They said it was an internal HR issue and that they don't discuss individual cases. And an interesting little nugget at the end of John's article about Eileen Gleeson saying that, you know, there could be a potential for her to step back into the role because she has that role in the FAI. But No one knows what it is. He says there's even the possibility of her stepping in as Canham's interim replacement. His deputy Shane Robinson was favourite to slot in, but interviews with other internal contenders have been held. So that means that there are other people within the FAI. Obviously, she is an internal contender as well. That there may be a possibility that she's going for the top dog job, which would be very interesting. I would be very surprised if that happened. I have to be honest, not in a way to kind of comment on Eileen's ability to do it or not. I would just be very surprised if that was a route the FAI took.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with you there. I think even Friday herself, it would probably, I'm not sure what her sort of aspirations are, but from a women's football point of view, I think we would prefer to see her in the head of women's football role, as opposed to taking over Mark Hannum's role. I think maybe women's football can get lost in that sort of in that broader sort of role within the FAI. So I do agree with you though, I can't see that really happening, but I would hope that whoever does come into both vacant roles now, I would want them to be an internal person, because I think it's all well and good bringing in external sort of voices from, say, the likes of England, where Mark Hanlon and Hannah Dingley have come from. But I think someone who knows the state of Irish football is probably best served to sort of stand to the role and to really know how to progress the game here. And that's just obviously an opinion, but I think that that really does matter. Someone who's grown up playing football, someone who's grown up knowing the sort of tradition and culture of the FAI and knows what's happened, the history there, and sort of knows, has contacts as well. Like, that's always important. And it takes people like that a time to sort of to transition into a role, into a new country, into a new organization. So I think if someone's familiar with the people and sort of the ways around it, it would probably be helpful as well.
Is there a danger if Eileen Gleeson was to take the role back that we would spend, I don't know, the next couple of months, depending on when she comes in, definitely if it's before the next international window, but we would just spend so much time asking questions of what happened in that interim period, what happened after Wales, how do you feel about the Colin Healey situation? How do you feel about everything that's been done in the role since? Was this always the plan to, do the international role for a little bit and then come back into it? Because there had been some reports, I think it was Mark Tyne, The Independent, initially when the role was advertised, that it was had moved from a permanent contract to a fixed term contract, which means that obviously there was a set amount of time on the contract, which meant that the caliber of candidates or maybe some leading international figures weren't as interested. Do you think there's a concern that it could distract from the actual work that's needed on the ground?
Yeah, and I think we have seen that. Obviously, we seem to sort of focus on the past things that happened. Even when Carla Ward was announced, we were solely focused on sort of the whole Colin Healey thing happened at the time. I'd hope that that would be all dealt with in like an initial sort of press conference, and then it would become one of those things where, okay, it's dealt with now, we can move on, and now she can obviously have to answer questions that are posed to her, but and sort of talk about what that period was like. But then after, she can go, right, let's sit down, let's put together a plan, a proper plan, and let's set goals and let's try reach those goals by XYZ. And I think she knows well herself how to lead in that role. And she's someone who's has a lot of experience in both an organizational role and an international role. So I think once that is dealt with initially, I think that she'll be able to sit down and properly go ahead with her role, I'd hope.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see what happens. And I think there definitely the feeling would be on the ground that a lot of people would be happy to see her back in that position. To quickly look at one good news story and one bad news story from across the pond. We'll start with the bad first, because then we can kind of end on a bit of a positive. But there was news this week that Blackburn Rovers, where Tyler Toland is based, might withdraw from the championship next season because the club's owners are unwilling to meet the league's requirements on facilities, player welfare, and staffing. And the way we first heard about this news was the players themselves posting about it, saying that they had been informed via WhatsApp that this was going to happen, which obviously is not a professional way of delivering news, even though, as we have seen over in the United States, even some of the most powerful people in the world seem to think that messaging services are the way to go about these things. But It's kind of it's following on from that conversation where this isn't the first team that news like this has come out about in the last couple of weeks. And, you know, I've seen a few things and had a few conversations with people that it does feel like there's a bit of a lag at the moment somewhere when it comes to women's football, where maybe we aren't the only people who haven't capitalized on the highs after the World Cup. It seems to be a bit of a problem in multiple different areas.
Yeah, definitely. And like this isn't, as you said, like this isn't something that we haven't seen before, which is the sad thing. I wish this was like a breaking news story, but it's one of those things where
Well, you
you
had
kind of see
Reading
it.
last season who dropped
Yeah.
out to the fifth tier because the club wouldn't pay for the championship and the requirements to be there.
Yeah, and like you see stuff like that now with Blackburn and you kind of go, oh well, nearly it was bound to happen again, you know, it needs to stop. And even the fact how it came out, like through sort of a tweet by, I think Niamh Murphy, who
Yeah.
is out with an ACL injury as well at the minute. So obviously she was talking about how difficult it is, the uncertainty of having an injury, and then even when you look at like the contract situation, if you compare the men's to the women's, there's men's players on 5-year deals, 6-year deals, whereas the majority of women's players is a 1 to 3 year deal, which like can leave a lot of uncertainty, especially with an injury like that, and then to obviously hear about it through a WhatsApp text that there's a 99% chance that you actually won't have a team in the championship next year after them sort of battling relegation. Like they were in the news a few months ago at the start of the year when their pay was all cut. They're all on nearly minimum wage, like in comparison to other championship clubs, which isn't good enough at all. And then to hear this news as well, it would really make you question sort of governance at some of these clubs and the decision making at the higher ups of these boards. Like Blackburn Rovers as a club has a huge history in the men's game, especially, and to sort of see that where like they're just not being given the correct like funding or governance that they require to stay up in a league like the championship, and it's so disappointing. And you feel for the players there, like you feel for the likes of Tyler Toland because she was one of their standouts this year. And obviously they fought so hard to stay up, and for this news to come out is just so disheartening. And I can't even imagine the feeling in that camp this week.
Exactly, and that's what Niamh was saying. Like, never mind the feelings of if you were actually playing, but to be in the position where you're going through an ACL injury, and as we've seen previously, there isn't a whole lot of supports at the lower end of the leagues for players who are experiencing ACLs, which can leave you out from like anywhere from 9 months to 24 months. You know, it really is a massive deal. So hopefully some sort of resolution comes to it, or someone steps in somewhere and says this is unacceptable. But a tough one for everyone that's dealing with it. To move to
And
something
even,
slightly
sorry,
more. Yeah, you're.
the story at Wolves as well.
Yeah, Wolves.
Obviously
Sorry, that was the other team that, yeah.
they're playing in the third tier and they were close to getting promoted to the championship this year. And I'm not exactly sure of the technicalities of it, but apparently I didn't know this, but the club has to sign off on sort of documents to say we intend to
Yeah.
take part of the championship next year if promoted, and they didn't fill out the forms and submit them in time for the deadline. So even if the Wolves players did manage to clinch promotion, they wouldn't have actually got the chance to play in the championship. They would have stayed where they are, which is incredibly disappointing again.
Yeah, you basically have to apply for a license that says you're going to commit to the financial necessities. So, like, say in the championship, there's a requirement for more full-time staff. There's a requirement for a certain number of squad players, whatever it is. And I think you sign that around January, February. So it's a couple of months out before, you know, you can kind of probably know at that stage if you're going to be close or not. But Wolves have been close the last few years, and the fact that the club, and it's not the first year that they haven't done it as well from some of the stuff that I read. So yeah, it's disappointing, especially for clubs that are, you know, well established. You know, Blackburn Rovers has, even if you look at the England internationals, you have like Ciara Walsh, Ella Toon, like Georgia Stanway as well, all came through that club. They were kind of one of the heavy hitters, and to not want to continue that legacy isn't great. And the other big news story we had this week over the water was the fact that Goodison is going to continue being the home of Everton football. That was announced on Tuesday that the women's team is now going to be their permanent home, which I think makes them though. Yeah, they're the only team in the league that plays all their would play all their games in what was once considered, you know, the men's home or the primary stadium. Which is great. I saw someone tweeting that he told his young daughter about it, who like he would go to all the matches with, and she was like, "So that means I can play at Goodison now." And I was like, "That's exactly what you want to happen in these situations." Like, I think it's a really good move for Everton, and hopefully is one that's successful for them in terms of getting the numbers in, and you know, they reach maybe the likes of what Arsenal have been able to do in terms of marketing it.
Yeah, and obviously, like Goodison Park, sorry, is such an iconic stadium, and it has been for years, and it's something that the people of like Merseyside are very familiar with, and it's something that would be very sentimental if you're looking to bring more fans in. It's something that a lot of men's fans would hold very close to their heart. Obviously, their initial memories of football would have been in Goodison Park, so that is something that could drive them back to the stadium to support the women's team as well. And yeah, I think it's brilliant. It's very, very special for those players to be able to sort of carry on the legacy of the stadium, and for that to be their new home. And we've seen Everton at the start of the year struggle, and then towards the end of the season sort of improve a lot. So hopefully this will be the new chapter for them, and could probably attract could be a sort of attraction feature for a few players in the window to bring in as well.
Definitely. I think the idea that you're going to be able to play in one of those stadiums and in front of hopefully big crowds should really be attractive. And Everton, as we saw in that January transfer window, as you said, they were smart about who they brought in and what they needed. So yeah, and we could have Courtney Brosnan, Heather Payne, Queens of Goodison, following in the steps of Seamus Coleman. You know, it doesn't sound like too bad. And Jacob Ryan, of course, now as well. Speaking of which, one of those names features in your team of the season that you have done up for us. Always good to have that little Irish representation in there. Would you like to run through who you have in your team?
Yeah, so we don't have Karen here, unfortunately, to pick it apart, but I'm sure you'll fill into that role nicely. But really
I could
tough.
never do it as well as Karen does it, to be
No,
fair. I don't have
no
the
one
I won't even say what I was going to say because she'll just text me annoyed.
can. Yeah, but obviously really difficult to pick. Very good, obviously, season for some individuals and then for some teams as well. So I'll fire away here. As you mentioned, the Irish contingency in goal, Courtney Brosnan. We have three at the back. We have Maya Letizia in the middle. We have Jane Riviera on the right, and we have Sandy Baltimore on the left. Then we have four midfield of Cal Dente, Yui Hasegawa, Soji Nuskin, and Grace Clinton. On the left, we have Vivian Essie. On the right, slightly out of position, we have Elizabeth Turland, and up front, we have Alessia Russo.
I won't lie, considering the dominance that they had in the league this season, I'm kind of surprised that there's not more Chelsea players in there. Can you talk me through that a little bit? So you obviously have Sandy Baltimore and you have, is that it? Oh, and
No,
Nuskin as well.
I would actually agree with you. But I do feel that Chelsea were nearly just so consistent as a team that they don't have those standout players. Obviously, all their players are world class. That's a given. But in terms of standout individuals, teams that are sort of, you look at Vivian Essie, she's a team that are maybe mid table, but she stands out so much because she's the outperforming factor of that team. And I think when you talk about team of the season, it is based on individual performances as much as Chelsea's success will shine through as the major story of this season. I think that nearly, if you look at their defensive record, it's obviously Hannah Hampton was tied Golden Glove with Valentina's Joyce as well. But obviously she's a great goalkeeper, she had a lot of saves to make, but not as many. Like Courtney Brosnan had 99 saves in the season, which is the most out of any player in the league, and she had the most shots to face as well. So if you're looking at that sort of thing, Courtney was more outstanding in terms of her own individual performance, keeping Everton in games, getting them points that they wouldn't have had if she hadn't saved them multiple times. So there is an argument to be made that there isn't a lot of Chelsea players here, and there is four United players,
I was going to
but then,
say, I was like, I think Karen
yeah.
would be happy enough with that, but I suppose I'm going to assume this slightly that what United achieved this season was not so much more surprising because we always had them up there, but kind of more of a bigger deal than Chelsea being Chelsea.
And I think when you compare the two clubs in terms of financial aid and governance, I
Yeah.
think Chelsea are very well supported. We've seen that obviously with two major signings, with obviously Naomi Girma coming in for a record fee of £1 million, and then obviously Ciara Walsh coming in as well. But then when you compare that to the likes of Manchester United, like it's not really something that will make headlines, but they've cancelled both the men and women's award ceremonies for this year because the men have underperformed. But like, the women had a great league campaign and are in an FA Cup final. So why are they punished for the men's disappointing season?
Did they do
Like,
the same thing last year? Or am I making
yeah.
that up?
No, they did. I think they did as well. It's silly things like that, and it's Jim Ratcliffe coming out and not knowing the players, not knowing your team captain, not sort of supporting the women's team at all and saying we're actually going to focus on the men's team first, because that's like the sort of true Manchester United. We're just going to put the women to the side and we can sort that after. Like the whole thing with the training facilities as well, that when Carrington's getting done up, the men will train on the women's pitch and then the women will find somewhere else. It's they're pushed to the side, and they've been in the news a lot this year, and I think for the players to sort of nearly overperform and exceed our expectations, I would say, impressive. So I
And
think
they're
that's
also in
something.
an FA Cup final this weekend as well, which, okay, admittedly they're up against Chelsea, but that doesn't mean that, they can't get something out of it. Looking at that team then, if you were to pick someone as your standout player, who have we got? You can do
I
a
don't.
top three if you want, but you have to give me like a top one.
I think Kel Dente, I've seen she got player of the season as well. Like, I think she's just magic. And I know it's the sort of thing of, oh, didn't win the league, why is she getting player? I've seen a lot of comments about that. Why isn't it going to a Chelsea player? But I think she's just a different level altogether. She just epitomizes the sort of Spanish flair trait in a player. Just popping up with goals, assists, like just such a special player to watch as well on the ball. She can just do things that no other player in the league can do. So she was the standout player for me. I think as well we'd have to look at Shakira Martinez, who isn't in the team, but coming in obviously from her loan mid-season and making such a an obvious difference in that West Ham side as well. Scoring I think 10 goals in her in her 12 games, which is she's nearly a Golden Boot contender, only playing half the season. So I think for next year she's definitely a player to look out for as well.
Definitely agree with that, and I'm hoping that Kel Dente will be able to bring some of that Spanish flair to the Champions League final and do slightly better than the men's side did against PSG. I watched that game in Paris last week, and it was kind of like, that meme of the person standing in the corner of the party and they're like, they don't know that I'm whatever. I very much felt like that, like masking myself in the midst of a bar with a load of PSG fans and them going wild and me kind of like politely clapping as everything happened and trying not to celebrate like when the penalty was saved. That was very much my vibe. So hopefully I will be surrounded by a few more Arsenal fans rather than Barca fans come Saturday week, Sunday week. Can't actually remember. Saturday week, yeah. Okay, well, shall we look then at the season in general? So the last weekend was a bit meh, apart from maybe the United Arsenal game, just because we knew Palace were being relegated, we knew Chelsea had won. Arsenal United was interesting, just there was like seven goals, two European contenders, there was lots of chaos happening. But I've had this conversation with a few people over the last couple of days and a little bit last week as well, just about reflecting on the season in general. And I feel like it was a hard season to get super excited about. So you had stuff like the massive signings that Chelsea had, world record fees, and you're like, okay, this is incredible. But they were going to Chelsea, which was already a stacked team, and you didn't necessarily see a leap in their ability or a leap in what they were doing. I mean, like, you would have expected a Champions League final at least at the other side of it for them. And it kind of like, are we reaching the stage that maybe the Premier League was at prior to this season, you could probably argue, where City were so dominant that because Chelsea are so dominant and because there's so few teams in the league, that it's hard to get excited for the season once it's all over?
I've seen some things written about that as well, just that it was kind of underwhelming and there isn't something to get too excited about. There really wasn't, to be fair. I think if you were to predict, if you were to set out at the start of the year and sort of predict your 1-12, you probably would have got it close enough to accurate. I think Man City not making Champions League might have been something to to look at, and probably Spurs finishing as low down as they did. But there was no major shocks, or obviously in games there was games that obviously like Arsenal losing to Villa the other week, like that was a shock in the grand scheme of things. But there was no sort of team that outperformed and exceeded all of our expectations and sort of stood out beyond anyone else. So there was no team that like was completely off the pace and like a team that had been established getting like relegated. Like there was no big major story, and like in the end there was no league title race either. I think that was never going to happen. Like Chelsea walked the league in the end. I think the only exciting part was probably the Champions League race at the end, the last few games, which obviously we've spoken about a lot, and that was the only sort of factor that was, oh, we have something to like look forward to now, end of the season. There's big games coming up, like the Manchester Derby was obviously a big point, and then United playing Arsenal at the weekend for like a second, third sort of playoff. But yeah, I'd agree. Like there's no major stories apart from the signings. Not really much to really reflect on at the end of it. And if I suppose. If we look at the men's Premier League this year, there's the teams such as like Forest like doing really well, and Newcastle winning their first trophy in however many years. So I think it would be good to see that in the future, and to have teams sort of build on sort of the peer pressure of Chelsea putting so much money into it. You'd hopefully see the likes of Liverpool, who had a disappointing season by all accounts, put more money into it and get big signing marquee players and sort of build on the season they had this year and try push on, because like Liverpool finishing top three and getting Champions League, that'll be a story, but we didn't have much of that this year.
I think it's funny with Liverpool because Jim Ratcliffe in particular has been so vocal and so dismissive of the women's team. We talk quite a lot about Manchester United and the money that should be being put into the team. Like, they're not necessarily the worst in the league when you consider what some other places are doing, like Liverpool. Like, they have such a small squad. There's been very little development over the years. They were obviously one of the original teams to actually have a women's team and to put the money into it and to give them opportunities, but there's been no progress from that. And we don't really point the finger at Liverpool and its hierarchy in the same way because they just don't talk about it or they just don't mention it, which I always find strange because I think if you think of Liverpool as a club and very much that local team mentality that you might not get in some other ones that I just feel like they're the sort of fans that should be rowing behind every facet of their team and not just the senior team. And then that you would expect, I suppose, maybe a bit more annoyance from a fan base that a club of its size isn't contributing. Because when you look at where they finished the season, 7th on how many points is that? 25 points. And United finished on 44 in third. That's a massive gap between them when in recent seasons, it was the two vying with each other.
And I think I've seen some stuff as well about the gap in the WSL between the top teams and the sort of middle bracket teams. Like it's huge, and that doesn't help with the competitiveness of the league either. I think when you look at other leagues, maybe European leagues, there is that competitiveness where if Chelsea are playing Leicester, like Chelsea are going to win the game. And I know there is a few shocks, but like we need to close that. It's that sort of bracket of anyone can beat anyone. That's something that I'd like to see happen in the league. But as I said, that'll only happen with increased sort of funding and increased attention to the league. But yeah, just on Liverpool, yeah, I think it's strange, because if you're looking at the likes of Arsenal and the fan base they have created over the last few years, if Arsenal were to go this transfer window now, obviously get into a Champions League final, finishing second in the league, by all accounts having a good season, like when you look at it, when you sort of reflect on it. If they don't go out now and number one, retain the team and the players they have, and then number two, go out and make like a big name signing and bring someone in who teams are going to go, geez, right, okay, they're looking to push for a league title this year, then the fans would go mad. Like even the whole thing with Jonas Edelvall, if that was at Liverpool, there wouldn't be the same sort of calling for his head, sort of attention. And I'm not saying that we want women's football to turn into like a toxic space on social media or anything, because I know that kind of did happen with Jonas, but they still, fans have a lot of power. And I think when teams like Arsenal, the Arsenal sort of the the people on the higher ups of Arsenal know that they need to make a big sign in now, or like know they have to push the women's team in order to keep the fans happy, because that's the aim of football. You need to keep your fans happy. And at Liverpool, I said there's not really that like big fan base that would call for these sort of things. There's no one on Twitter or anything calling for we need to bring in XYZ, we need to improve our defense, we need to look for a striker now to pair up, because like Olivia Smith's standout player for them this year, but we don't really have like a consistent player. Obviously Leanne's there, but sort of riddled with injuries at the minute and couldn't get a good run of games together. So there's no one really calling for that, and there won't be much done about it unless there is, I don't think, because there's no pressure on them to make these big moves.
Yeah, definitely not. And I think even if you look at somewhere like Arsenal, the impact of signing someone like Cole Dante had, and also getting Chloe Kelly in and that loan move was absolutely massive. I think if they could manage to hold on to Chloe Kelly, that would definitely be a good signifier of their intentions that, you know, they are going toe to toe with City after losing Miedema to her last season as well, albeit it seemed like they kind of opted to go that way. I do think that that will be really important for them in the coming months in the summer transfer window, especially depending on how the game against Barca goes. So Scarlett, if you were to, I think we've probably established that as much as Chelsea winning the league and doing all the impressive things that they did is great, that United are probably the most impressive team in what they have done this season. But to look the other way in terms of teams that haven't done all that well. You mentioned the fact that Tottenham finished second from bottom earlier. There's been some reports this week that Robert Willem is going to leave his post there. And I know, like so many times, myself and Karen, before you joined the podcast, and Emma Byrne as well, we'd be kind of relatively positive about Spurs at the start of the season, and then things would just kind of drift off, but never to the extent that they have, where they're in the position that they are this year.
Yeah, and I'm just looking at their form here. The last sort of half of the season, the last game they won was the 26th of January, where they won 3-2 against Palace, and since then they've had, just trying to count here, 10 games where without a win, a few three draws and maybe 7 losses. So that's, from Spurs standards, not good enough at all, to be honest. And yeah, like we spoke a while about. We were talking about Villa for a few weeks and how poor they'd been, and Tottenham nearly slipped under the radar a bit maybe when we were doing that, and Villa managed to bounce back and finish sixth. So it's funny how you can get deflected by things. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see now. I think Bethany England announced that she'll be leaving as well at the end of the year. I think to go abroad somewhere. So definitely I doubt that's a great environment to be in, and I doubt that's a sort of a good change room to be in the back end of this year. But you'd hope a team like Spurs can some bounce back from that, and if they are getting a managerial change in, maybe think about a change of sort of structure, a change of shape, and bringing in sort of they need to bring in a lot of consistent players who can play week in, week out, instead of looking at a bigger picture of bringing in like a marquee signing that we've been talking about for the bigger clubs. That's the sort of stage we need to go right. We need to bring in a manager, and they need to say, right, this is how we're going to play. If we're going to play sort of long ball football, we need tall centre halves. We need strikers that are quick, wingers that are quick. If that's the way they're going to play, if you want to play ball, you need ball playing centre halves. You need a solid midfield where players are going to work for you in transition, and you need to focus on sort of whatever style that manager is going to bring. So I think that's something definitely. That will be interesting to see during the off season who they do bring in, both managerial and for player as well.
Yeah, you would say maybe one of the few positives that are in it for Spurs there is that they have appointed former Arsenal CEO Vinny Venkatesham, who was like a massive, like he built up the women's team. He was a massive supporter of them. And I think with Spurs, they haven't really had that before in their midst, you know. You could argue maybe bringing in someone like Alex Morgan when they did was a big deal, but then there was a lot of reports that whenever she was in there, she was really frustrated with the situation with the team, and brought that to the higher ups there because obviously she does hold that sort of superpower. But I think having someone like him in a CEO position who has overseen the growth of the women's team, who regularly attended games, who
I'd say it was probably part of those big North London derby days that were between Spurs and Arsenal in the Emirates. That could be a real positive for them in terms of it, getting the budget, promoting the team and having those big days at the Tottenham Stadium, and also maybe bringing a few heads into it that aren't there at the moment in terms of within the club hierarchy.
Yeah, and that's sort of what I was touching on earlier with like the FAI trying to get internal people into these roles. I think you're right. I think it's great to have someone who's familiar with. I know it's not directly the same. Obviously, Arsenal and Tottenham are very different, but it's the same area. It's the same sort of. There's teams with very similar histories, and he'd be able to sort of, as you said, figure out what needs to be done to sort of promote the game more, get more fans into seats, and like you talked about, like that. The Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and the amount that's been hosted there since it sort of opened a few years ago, like even when you think about concerts, like it's bringing money into the club, and if you can sort of promote a big derby day, big North London derby in Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, you'll get the Arsenal fans there, and if you can get that sort of fan base of Tottenham fans as well, that'll help push on the players and the sort of budget that the team will have to have in the sort of off season like we are now. So yeah, I think he'll have to think outside the box. And I think he'll be the right person to do that, knowing the way that things work in Tottenham and knowing how to promote, as you said, promote these things. But I think, yeah, they'll already have a long off season of sorting things out.
We've had a kind of not actual real battle between Chelsea and Manchester United over the course of the podcast in terms of who deserves team of the season, but they are in fact facing off against each other in the FA Cup final this weekend, excuse me. We know Chelsea are the better team, obviously, and the reasons why we gave Manchester United the title of best team this season is just because of what they've achieved with the resources they have. But do you give them any chance at the weekend against this Chelsea team who arguably have kind of crawled to the end of the season, whether you look at how they performed in the Champions League or some of the results that they had in the league towards the latter end as well? You know, like they just passed Liverpool at the weekend. You know, could United see that as a little gap, that there might be a gap in the armour that they can attack?
Yeah, definitely. I think if you're Manchester United, you're sort of putting all your eggs into this basket now. Like they know what they have to do in order to win it. Like they won it last year, and I think to go 2 years in a row would be really special for that group. And I think they deserve a trophy at the end of the year. Sorry, I think that they've really performed really well this year, and I think that they would deserve a trophy to sort of something to show for nearly at the end of the year. And you're looking at Chelsea, obviously won the league and have been sort of celebrating the last few weeks. But it's needless to say they'll be wanting to get another piece of silver as well with the sort of Champions League disappointment. So I think it'll be a really interesting game. I think when you look at United's last game against Arsenal, obviously we've known United for having their solid sort of backline, and to sort of cough up 4 goals against Arsenal isn't something that they'd be looking to do a week before the final, so that's something that they're definitely going to be, I'd say, a bit concerned about. But like, you can't leak goals against this Chelsea side because they'll just punish you. So I think it'll be a really interesting game. I think it's two sides that have been the outperformers in the league this year, and I think it'll be a really interesting game, and I think United will definitely back themselves.
Yeah, that game is on Sunday at 1:30. So kind of a nice little time if you want to get your fix of women's football for the weekend. Scarlett, thank you very much for everything this season, particularly the team of the weeks, because I know how annoying they can be at times to put together. Very much appreciated. That's all for us this week. But as I said at the start of the podcast, it's not all from us. There's still quite a lot of football to be played, despite the league over in England wrapping up. And of course, we still have our own league at home to go. So we have to keep track of that. Sligo Rovers are going to make a mad dash for the top of the table. It's going to be great. In my dreams. But for now, we will leave you with that. The Quigging Pod on Off the Ball is sponsored by Cadbury, official snack partner to Republic of Ireland women's national team. Thank you all very much for listening.
On this morning's Off the Ball breakfast,
we had this. Would there ever be a job in Irish rugby again that you might be interested in, do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually went to Racing played Connacht in Galway. We were like, oh God, we miss Ireland. Like, we honestly, genuinely, I'm just saying it because I'm on with you guys, but like, we really, really had a best time of my career.
And we also had this.
Like, last year, football had, I think, one of the games, like, 8 touches, no shots. And it was definitely affecting my mental health because you're giving so much to something and you feel like you're going home so frustrated all the time.
You can catch everything from this morning's Off The Ball breakfast elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning from 7:30.